This meeting is now being recorded.
And you're, Kathy, I do believe that you're loud and clear for us. So.
That I'm what? I'm sorry, I'm trying to come into the Adobe Connect room right now.
Ah, we can hear you loud and clear.
Terrific. Let's see, do you want to kick this off or should I?
Well, let's go ahead and get the recording started, but Michelle, do you want to go ahead and announce the start of the call?
Absolutely. Thank you, Julie. Well, I'd like to welcome everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the RPM subteam for URS practitioners call on the 21st of February, 2018, held at 1800 UTC. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call. I would like to remind all participants, if you would please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn the meeting back over to Kathy Kleinman.
Terrific. Thank you very much. Welcome, everyone, to this rather unusual session. This is the RPM subteam for URS practitioners. We're supposed to be gathering data on the questions we might be asking practitioners, attorneys who work with the URS system, and maybe others. There may be other groups as well. Traditionally, in subteams, the co-chairs, myself, Phil Corwin, and J. Scott Evans do not chair. Traditionally, in subteams, we pick a chair or two from the membership, and then co-chairs participate as ordinary members. We don't have to do it that way, but that's how we've done it for the last year or so in the working group, and it seems to work out very well. And I'm looking forward to the discussion here. As you know, in parallel, we have the subteam for data working with the URS providers and also the subteam for data working on the URS documents. So if we have questions and want to do shout-outs to them, not in real time, of course, but after the meetings, we can see if they're raising similar questions or if some of the issues that come up on our discussions may actually fit within some of the categories that they're looking at. So let's kick this off. And, Julie, I'm going to let you kind of, if you could, run and see if, run a mini kind of, not really election, but poll to see if anybody wants to become chair or co-chair of this subteam.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank
this
you.
Is Julie from staff. So I would like to open it up to all participants to see if we have any volunteers to chair this call. We have a call this week. We will have a call at the same time next week. And hoping to wrap up our work fairly quickly, and then we will want to do a report in on our work in ICANN 61 as well. So please, any volunteers? So I'm not seeing any hands raised. Going once, going twice. Kathy, I do not see any volunteers.
So I'm going to randomly ask if Jason Schaefer would be interested in.
There you go, Kathy.
Thank you,
there
Jason.
There you go. I raised my hand, and there you are. I have the thankless job of chairing the subgroup.
I appreciate it, and leading the discussion, which As a UDRP practitioner, and perhaps as a URS practitioner, you have special knowledge in this
area
as well.
Sure. So.
Thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So you'd like me to lead the call now?
Hi, Jason. Yes. This is Julie from staff, and I also want to thank you very much for volunteering. Thank you so much. Yes, if you'd like to. Generally, what we do is the chair runs through the agenda, and we have actually recovered the first two items in the agenda. So we're actually now on the next item, item three, and so if you wanted to kick us off with that item, that would be wonderful. And please, of course, let me know, staff, if you need assistance with anything.
Okay. Thank you very much. Well, thank you, everyone, for attending this call. I know it's taking time from all of our busy schedules, so we're all familiar with working groups and subgroups, so I appreciate everybody taking the time to do this. item three, which is discussion. It's, you know, we're looking to identify a set of experienced URS practitioners and develop the questions that we can direct to them to help us inform the discussion as we move forward in the larger working group. So I guess with that, we should open the floor to identifying those URS practitioners that we all respectively think could be useful participants in this process. As another point, though, I'm wondering if we should include on the agenda, do we have any understanding yet of, or is that our job now to figure out how we do the outreach to these practitioners once we come to that, and what their actual job will be? Kathy?
So, Jason, this is Kathy. I have my hand raised in the room.
Yes.
Okay. So what I was thinking was that we have the two items you just mentioned and, of course, the third item. So who are the practitioners, and how do we reach them, and then what do we ask them? And so I know I've been thinking a lot about what we might ask them. I also started a spreadsheet just on my own initiative. I asked Barry Cobbs. He's pulled out all the cases. And I just asked him for the list of all the cases, and I started filling in who the providers were, because that's not something that – not sorry, not who the providers are, who the practitioners are, because that's not something Rebecca Tushnet is doing or that Barry Cobbs, our ICANN staff member, data expert, has been doing. And so I've got some of that and can talk about that. But, you know, the questions that we'd be asking them is kind of – for me, what's on my mind as well. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. Peter?
Hi, Peter. To start with, going back to the point two on the agenda, do we have some kind of picture of that with the items, with the questions? Because I was not 100% clear that all the questions that we're going to ask the attorneys are
yes,
settled yet. That was the first one. And the other one was that I can go through some cases. I also have the cases I've handled as a panelist, and see especially if there are any attorneys, representatives for the parties that have been made some special notes or handled a specific amount of cases, considering that or indicating that those could also have some comments back to us on our questions.
Okay, thank you, Petter. I think those are both very important points. I myself have, you know, some question too. Maybe we should take a bit of a step back here, and maybe Kathy can help inform a little bit. You know, yes, I think the purpose of this call, we still have not identified those questions for what we will be asking of the practitioners. That's a critical point. Though I do know there was some discussion on last working group call, and obviously this subgroup was created. I'm not entirely clear on what our mandate is. So if there is, maybe you want to provide a little clarity on that, Kathy, or staff? Okay, Kathy?
It's a good question. And so in the co-chairs meeting, which is every Friday, we followed up on the Wednesday call, and Jay Scott, as you know, chaired last week, and we didn't really add much detail or background. So everyone who was on the call last week kind of brings their own understanding to what we're doing here, which is indeed, you know, the questions. My understanding was that we're trying to decide what questions to practitioners would help us do data-driven decisions about whether the URS is meeting its fit for purpose, whether it's meeting its mission, and whether it has unintended consequences. if we want to follow along the high-level topics, that's really what the documents team is doing right now, is going through each of the high-level topics, the complaint, the response, the notice, in light of the five high-level questions. If we wanted to do something like that, we could, or if we wanted to base our questions more on some of the concerns that, say, John Berryhill has raised, or Doug in the discussion that we had with them, the educational session that we had with them early in our URS, or certainly based on the expertise of this group. I haven't done any URSs, but Petter, it sounds like, has, as have others. And we've also maybe individually checked and with people about their concerns. So kind of how do we bring a set of issues and concerns together, maybe brainstorm a bit, and then, you know, so that not everything that comes out of our mouths is automatically a question that goes to the practitioners, but kind of what's the scope and nature of the concerns that people on the ground might be able to help us with. Like, I've heard formatting is terrible for the forum on the URS, just a big problem. So that's kind of one of the questions that we might be asking. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Kathy. All right, well, with that, I think maybe we can tackle the, if it's okay with the group, if we could tackle the what I think might be the easier and faster point of brainstorming and throwing out names of the practitioners that should be considered. We can probably run through that in short order, and then we could perhaps move to that second question, which would, I think, require a little more thought. Is that something that that the group is okay in doing? Does anybody have an objection to doing so? Okay, it looks like Kathy, you have your hand up.
Jason, would that be something that we could do this week as well as next week, in case other people want to join me in kind of diving into the URS cases and finding some of the practitioners? We've got some unusual ones, actually, who seem to come up again and again. I feel like I've just begun that process.
Okay, so you think it might be helpful to have a more extensive review of actual cases to help inform that discussion?
I like the idea of starting with who we know now, and then maybe we can help inform it next week with some of the practitioners we're not as familiar with.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Kathy. George?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear
you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
This is George Chavansky for the record. So I think that it's fine to start putting out names and thinking of people for practitioners, but I do think it's equally important to think on the practitioner side of things. Is really, there are a lot of people who practice in this area, in this space, and there are some people who have decided not to do URSs and to proceed instead by doing the UDRP or going other routes, lawsuits or whatnot. And it would be interesting to get the insight of people from, not just people who have filed URSs, but people who practice in online enforcement or registration or whatever, area that they come from, in determining why or why not they don't use the URS. And so I think our notion of practitioners should be expanded to beyond actual people who either are panelists or who file URSs.
Okay, thank you, George. That's a fair point to consider. Let's note that. I see Petter has his hand.
Yeah, I agree with Kathy that, of course, if we have some specific persons today, that's excellent. But then if we can have one or two days and come up with suggestions for persons to interview. And then I agree with George. Of course, it will be very interesting also to hear those that have decided to not use the URS, but and continuously are using the UDRP instead. If if we can have some conclusion, if it's just because of the different system that it's possible to actually cancel or transfer the disputed domain name, or is it what's more interesting for our group? Is it because they see some difficulties in the URS system as such? And then, of course, we don't have, it's not that easy to find that list of names, but I presume that we can also, if there is some way to quickly go through some URS cases and see if there are some specific parties or representatives there that continuously using the UDRP but cannot be seen in the URS. I don't know if how to make that that the conclusion, but again, it's an interesting group.
Sure, thank you, Petter. I as a practitioner, I also agree that I'm assuming most of us on this call can have some level of experience, but myself, I will say that I have extensive experience in UDRP and very little experience with URS just by nature of the cases. And I think that I have a couple of practitioners in mind myself, three of which we know, but two of which had actually only one or two cases that they've even handled. So I think we're going to find, even before we jump into the review of the URS, I think it's going to be quickly apparent, readily apparent, that there's, even of all the cases, we have very few attorneys handling these on certainly I wouldn't say anybody's really handling these on a regular basis, but that's important to note as to why attorneys may or may not be using the URS, and what is it that about the URS that is not attractive or is attractive. So I think we should do that. So I'm in agreement there. Kathy, is someone going to be keeping a spreadsheet on this, or how are we going to log the recommended lists of attorneys?
We could do it two ways. I just started on my own because I kind of wanted a sense of who this group was. And I'm going to put a really odd one into the chat room, yoyo.email of cons. But actually, that's a response. These are not defaults. That is the respondent to a number of, on the registrant side, to a number of URS determinations, strangely enough. So if
yes.
There's some way to reach whoever that is, it would be very interesting. I put some more well-known names, David Taylor, John Berryhill, and somebody named Richard Biagi, who I saw in several cases. So we could do it two ways. I'd be happy to hand my spreadsheet over to staff, and we could put it up on Wiki. We could put it up on a Google Doc. And I found it took about an hour to do, once I had the case number and the URS, and the forum's URS decision template open, you know, it was just cut and paste for an hour, and I did about 30 cases.
Right.
Maybe a little more. And watched, you know, and watched a good television series in the background.
Yes.
So you guys let me know what you'd like me to do. I'd be happy to give it to Julie and Michelle.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. I see Julie's hand is up.
Yeah, and thank you, Kathy, for that. So staff is happy to help in this, and I think probably a Google Doc would be a good way to go. So if you want to pass on what you've got so far, Kathy, we can go ahead and drop that in a Google Doc and send that link around to everyone, and people can add to it, or they can send to staff ideas to add to it. We can do it however you like. Thank you.
Great. I'll do that right after the call.
Excellent. All right. Thank you, Julie. Thank you, Kathy. We have a solution. I see that a few people are typing in some suggestions in the chat of attorneys. Does anybody want to mention any other attorneys who haven't typed in yet? I agree. I would like to throw in personally John Berryhill, which is on the list, and I'd also like to add Zach Muscovich on the list as having experience. I see that Doug Eisenberg is there. I also agree that he would be a very good candidate for this process. Does anybody else have any recommendations they'd like to include for the time being? Okay,
yes.
CSC,
CSC Digital Brand Services. It's not a specific name, but they seem to be doing a lot of representation.
Right, CSC, yes. Okay, yep, they are, you know, I guess, yeah, that's actually a good question, Kathy. That raises the point. Are we talking about brand protection providers that tend to do, I mean, I don't know, but does anybody on this call know other than you, Kathy, that are these Mark Monitors of the world, CSCs of the world, are they the ones that are typically filing these? Does anybody else have any insight into that? I see George. It looks like you're on mute.
Off on mute. George Nahid Chavanzi put a record. Yes, they do. The CSC and Mark Monitor do offer services in this area, and so you will see these cases that come up, and they have, you know, their pool of attorneys that they use to file. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see if you have people from CSC or from Mark Monitor at least give their experience to the URS or be people that could be tapped to give some information. But by that token, then, you know, I think that what we have is, and I agree with you, what you said earlier, Jason, is that you have people who have done a handful of them, and you have some who might have done a few more, but I don't think you have anybody who's going to, you know, just jump off the page as being the ultimate, you know, expert. And I think certainly a lot of people who have filed UDRPs and do UDRPs, you know, have tons of experience and, you know, how to address these types of cases, and so they, to me, would be considered as your pool of potentials as well.
Okay, thank you, George. Yes, I agree that that's probably the case we're going to find in our next steps, and I think that most of our sources will be experienced UDRP practitioners, whether or not they have extensive experience in the URS. I see David Westlow has just been mentioned, and Petra's going to look at some European attorneys. Those are great ideas. Okay. Well, I guess as we've decided, it appears that the subgroup has decided that we'll have staff prepare and manage the spreadsheet and circulate that. I think we're going to agree. Does everyone agree that we'll continue this discussion for the next call? And maybe we could then move to, if it's okay with the group, move to the second question, which is starting to coalesce around the actual questions. Does anybody have an objection to doing so? Okay, I don't hear any hands. See any hands? I don't hear any objections. So let's move to the second part of this call, which is beginning to think about what types of questions we need to ask. I see Petter has his hand up.
Thanks, Petter here. Specific question that I've also considered when I've seen the cases, my own cases, is to ask those that have used the URS if they referred to the Trademark Clearinghouse registration, or if they choose to show use by a printout from an active website. I think it's interesting to see what kind of evidence of use they have referred to and why they choose that specific type of evidence of use and not the other one.
Okay, thank you. That is an important point. So I think we'll just record that the one of the questions is choice of evidence and whether TMCH or other uses being preferred for establishing the claim. Does anybody else have some thoughts or suggestions? Okay. Kathy?
Yeah. Question about the following up on kind of the proof of use. The SMD file, are people, I've heard some concerns, well, from John Berryhill in specific, that it's a trap for the unwary, in his words. So is the SMD file, so asking practitioners if the SMD file is a good basis for proof of use of the mark. I printed out an SMD file, and it was gobbledygook. I could see the mark, but I couldn't actually see any of the proof of use. I couldn't see any of the categories of goods and services. It was all gobbledygook. I could see the mark and some kind of an ID number, and after that it was gobbledygook. So is the SMD file useful as a proof of use, and if not, you know, what would they recommend? Thanks, Jason.
Okay, thank you, Kathy. Yes, there's been a lot of talk about SMD files and problems with that, so that's certainly something we should include with this question. One of the earlier questions, which was discussed on this call, which I agree with, is maybe a threshold question of why, whether or not a practitioner is choosing to use the URS, and if not, why they are bypassing the URS and moving to UDRP or you know, litigation. I think that would help us generally get a better understanding of what's happening with the URS, because I do agree with others here that you know, many do bypass the URS. So what is happening here and what, you know, what is informing those discussions? Likewise, I may suggest also, you know, these practitioners that we do identify that are bringing the claims, whether they are CSC or Mark Monitor or other individual practitioners, you know, are they happy with the process? Are they happy with how the providers are handling things? Or is it clear? Is there room for improvement on the procedural aspects? I know there have been many complaints about it's not a very, the process just is not very smooth from time to time, so that may be, you know, are they happy with the URS? Are they happy with the providers? Are they happy with the results? Any other thoughts from the group on potential questions for now? Anybody else have any ideas on what we should be asking participants? Kathy?
Great. Thanks, Jisha. An issue was raised in the chat room about the fees, and I was wondering if the person who raised it could provide some more background on that, on kind of what type of question they're thinking of. I can think of all sorts of questions, but it's good. One thing I was wondering was an issue I've raised before is notice. Are the practitioners finding that the notice is getting through to the registrants? And if so, which notice? Is it the email notice? Is it the fax notice when it's possible? Is it the hard copy notice? Appeals. I was wondering if there's a number of new issues. It's kind of a whole different bucket from the procedural things, but how do the practitioners feel about some of the special, there are some differences between the UDRP and the URS. One is of course, the ability to refile for 6 months after the domain name is suspended if there's been a default by the registrant. Then there's an appeal process. How do practitioners feel about some of these, I don't know, extended mechanisms, for lack of a better term, extended URS mechanisms?
Okay, thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
That's good. I see Petter has his hand up.
Thanks, Petter here. I was also going to raise the appeal question. I think it could be very interesting to also hear from, of course, both parties, but perhaps especially from domain holders in what constraint they have used the appeal process, and also generally what people think about it. It's the possibility to make an appeal is, of course, good, but it also extends the final decision of a dispute. So it could be interesting to hear from both sides what they think about the appeal process and what we can do to make it better.
Good. Good. Thank you, Petter. I think that is important. I don't know about the rest of the group, but my first thought on that is that I believe, without really reviewing everything, that there's very few cases that have really filed the appeal and followed through, but that's just I have no real evidence of that. I don't know if anybody else has any thought on is the appellate mechanism really being utilized, but that's, I guess we should put that down and explore those cases that have been appealed. We will have to figure out how that gets accomplished. I think it was the question of fees. I think it was Zhao. You had mentioned it in the chat room. Is there any further guidance on what you are asking about fees, or anything that you? What your question is? Yes? Go ahead. You may be on mute. Can you hear us?
Okay.
Yes, hi.
Yes. I'm thinking about that to ask the practitioners about whether the fee is too high or too low, and they feel it's appropriate to sue the U.S. to help them to protect. Hello?
Yes, go ahead. We can hear you.
To protect their dominance or something. I think it's key. Yeah, I think it's a key point for us to think. Because I have connect with many brand owners in China, and I try to ask them to buy some TMCH and some service, but they feel the fee is too high and the service is not very suitable for them. So I think the fee is a very key issue for this brand owner. So I hope we can, because we are kind of to design a question list, and we will propose those lists to brand owners. I think the fee is very important to ask about them. Yeah, that's it.
Okay,
I
thank
hope
you, Zhao. I
get what I mean.
Zhao, I think yes. I understand your point. Question of whether or not the fee structure works for the URS, and does it factor into a brand protector's decision whether or not to file. So I think that's clear, and we can certainly include that on the list. Okay, thank you. Any other thoughts on questions? We have everything from fees to appeals to technical issues with evidence, TMCH versus use, SMD file, notice, which is very important, whether the notice, how the notice process is or is not working. Petter, I see your hand up.
Petter here. One question, of course, is also what people think about the suspension period. I mean, the the termination is that it's suspended for the duration of the registration. And what maybe need to change about that in order to have a bit extended time of the suspension from at least from those that that have filed an appeal, and what the main holders think about that.
Okay. Thank you, Petra. I think that's a good point. I would maybe tack on to that that your point of the suspension may also apply to and the decision whether or not to utilize the URS as a protection mechanism or just simply to bypass it. So,
yeah, definitely.
Okay. Excellent. I see Zhao's hand up. Was that from before? Go ahead.
Okay, I also think the way that those brand owner and the practitioners to know about URS, how do they know about URS is very important. Do they see the advertisements or their brand protection service provider to tell them about the URS, or how do they know about URS is also very important. Yeah, I think that's just
okay.
How do they know about this mechanism? Yeah, I think it's important. So I also think it's for us to add this kind of thing to the list. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. So.
Yeah, that's all.
Thank you, Zhao. Zhao has raised, and it looks like Kathy has raised in the chat, points on the knowledge about the URS, and then, of course, the defenses. So I guess we could perhaps lump that into a discussion or question about URS awareness generally, and how it is being disseminated to brand owners and others. And the effectiveness of that. Okay. Kathy's hand is up. Go ahead.
So this is Kathy. So what about the expertise of the examiners? How do the practitioners feel about the expertise of the examiners? So clearly Petter is an examiner. Doug Eisenberg is an examiner. But I've also heard that there are people who don't appear to be doing any UDRPs who are examiners as well. And so I've heard some concerns. So would that be a legitimate question? How do the practitioners feel about the examiners and the fairness of the decisions that they're getting in the URS on both sides? Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kathy. I certainly agree that's a great question, whether or not practitioners are satisfied with the examiners and their treatment of the URS and their knowledge. I think that gets into another issue that's not necessarily part of our subgroup, but it certainly applies more broadly, is you know dealing with the providers, the training, and how these examiners are taught to address this. So we all know that the URS is supposed to be a very fairly streamlined, simple process and not something that requires extensive analysis. But again, that's a great question that will get to the heart of that. I see George's hand is up. It looks like you're on mute though, so.
No, I'm off mute now, I hope. So.
Yeah.
George and HRS is better record. So I think that on along that line, the other question would be to look at the point that I think Lori Shulman had made, maybe a week or two ago on one of our calls about, the fact that this is early stages. And so the question is whether or not there should be something analogous, for the URS, such as WIPO's Overview 3.0 that they have, which is, very based on, tons of cases and reviews of many cases. As a guidepost and gives a more certainty to the structure.
Okay, thank you, George. I think that's that's a great point. Let's note that. Whether or not.
I have one other point.
Okay.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
The one other point that I had is that we should also, in this, apart from looking at just the remedies and the effectiveness of the remedies or whether they're deterrent to people using the URS, is look at the burden of proof. Like, is the burden of proof, you know, need to be modified? Is the burden of proof, or should the policy be modified? So, for example, should it be expanded to go from bad faith registration and use to bad faith registration or use?
Okay. So, George raised, I guess, 2 points here. One, going to the fact of should we have some sort of analogous to WIPO's overviews to apply to the URS to provide guidance, which would certainly help practitioners and examiners, and then, of course, then getting into effectiveness of the remedies and, of course, burden of proof. From a practitioner standpoint, is the burden of proof, is it a good burden of proof? Is it clear? Should we change anything in, and then George has got into the bad faith and or a discussion, which is a substantial discussion in the history of the UDRP. So, okay, duly noted. Looks like Jay mentioned in the chat regarding what is clear and convincing and how that is being applied. I think that's important. So we have again, I think clear and convincing might get into training and how not practitioners but rather providers are handling this. I think that's key for the larger group, certainly. But I guess it certainly could apply to practitioners at the level of do they understand what their burden is to establish their case and is it being applied from their perspective. Okay, looks like we've covered quite a bit. Anybody else have any other thoughts? Kathy's typing, says great, excellent. Okay, it looks like we've covered quite a bit today in terms of questions and also suggested practitioners. I guess at this point, barring anybody else having questions to add or practitioners to add, anybody else have any other thoughts on how we should move this subgroup forward, points we should consider for next week? Kathy is asking, do we have any practitioners online today? Anybody here a practitioner, as we're calling it? And do you want to share your thoughts on how the URS is being implemented? Julie's hand is up.
Yeah, thanks very much. This is Evelyn from staff. So just action items that staff can take away. We've mentioned the first of doing a Google spreadsheet of the list of practitioners, and we will put that together and get that out to all of you. We'll also go ahead and do a Google Doc, if you like, where we can take these questions and put them into the document, and that leads me to a question. I see that there was in the chat a suggestion to do buckets. There was, I think, from George, procedural issues, substantive issues, practical issues, and then there was, I think, Colin who had a suggestion of having a third bucket being tactics and approaches or something similar. Would you like staff to take a first cut at trying to arrange these in buckets in the Google Doc?
Yes, I think that would be very helpful to help us move forward. If you could collect what was discussed in the chat and on phone and try to record that for us, and then we could take it from there and try to you know, improve upon the scope and the points. And I think as we go forward, everybody could agree that as we see these questions in writing, it'll spur further discussion in detail. So I think that if you don't mind, that would be a big help.
This is Julie from staff again. Thank you very much. We'll go ahead and we'll take that action. And then we can just also let folks know that on the agenda we do have next meeting listed, and we do have on the schedule to meet at the same time next week.
Okay. Excellent. Well, Kathy, go ahead. See your hand is up.
And a quick note to follow up with what Julie said on the procedural side. Normally, the last meeting of the month is our Asia-friendly meeting, but we're keeping it at this time, and hopefully not too many people will be excluded. So just normal time, which is perfect, and everyone will get a reminder. And there was a question about the GDPR. I don't know. I'll answer it quickly, which is, that the European privacy law that we're discussing in many other areas of ICANN, and it's interesting to think about how we might discuss it here. I'm not really sure, so I have a question also, but don't know how far we want to go down that path, but in case it was a question of just what the term means, that's the European privacy law going into effect with penalties in May of 2018. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. I don't know if we need to get, does anybody want to get into that in more detail here? I don't know if we need to, but anybody have any further thoughts on GDPR and how it may or may not apply? Okay. Excellent. I saw Scott had his hand up, but it looks like no longer. All right. Well, I think barring any other points that any of you may have, I think we've conducted a nice call, been fairly efficient, which is always good. I appreciate everyone's.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know if anybody can hear me. I seem to have a bad connection, but I got here late because the notice said 1400, which to me was 2 o'clock for start time.
Okay. Staff, anyone have any thoughts on? I would make sure that the notice is clear.
Yes, this is Julie Helen from staff, and I'm looking at the notice right now, and I see that it is an error, and many apologies, Scott and others, for that. The time in UTC is correct, but the time as listed for EST is not correct, and not correct also for the Pacific time zone as well. So we'll make sure that's corrected in the next notice that goes out for next week.
Okay. Thank you, Julie. Well, Scott, since you seem to have joined us late, just for a quick recap, we've reviewed potential practitioners to include on the list, and we're going to be circulating a spreadsheet in a Google Doc to have practitioners that we would approach for these questions, and we also began to coalesce around ideas and questions to ask those practitioners. I guess, do you have any offhand, and this is going to be continued next week as well, but if you have any practitioners in front of mind that you might want to throw onto the list, if you have anybody you'd like to suggest now, please do. If not, we can just wait for that list to be circulated and continue on next week. Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
This is Scott Austin. Can you hear me?
We can hear you now. Yep. Go ahead.
Yeah, just a brief note. Okay, because I have missed Scott Austin for the record, because I have missed the beginning of the meeting, I don't know if it was discussed if we want to talk with practitioners that are URS or also UDRP and URS. I mean, I know we're focusing on URS, but I guess my question was whether or not there was a subset, because they're very, very different in terms of the amount of time they're given. And I don't know if these, I know when I received my URS training, it sounded almost as if there would be bundling, there would be multiple URS claims coming at the same time. So, and I don't know if they receive bench memos, for example, similar to what is done sometimes with UDRP. I don't know if any of that's been discussed, but I think that in terms of selecting practitioners, I just didn't know if we were limiting it to URS practitioners or others as well.
Okay, thank you, Scott. Yes, we did cover that a bit, and you're right. We all agree that given the nature of URS and our world that we operate in, that you know, there may be crossover, there may be people that are more familiar with UDRP or other processes and not as familiar with URS. So yes, that's we're not limiting it. We're going to be more broad with people that have expertise. One of the questions will be, you know, why they're not selecting URS and maybe choosing to bypass it. That's one of the questions on the table. So that certainly is important to note. So thank you. We'll be doing that. So if you want to add to the Google Doc, you know, people that are not necessarily strictly URS practitioners or those that have filed, you can you know, certainly do so. Okay. I think we've exhausted the topics for today. We will, I guess if anybody has any last points, we can reconvene next week. And it looks like, I guess, staff will be able to circulate the Google Doc, and that will help us prepare for next week. Okay, any other points? Barring that, I think we can move forward. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks so much for joining. Thanks so much for sharing, Jason. Really appreciate it. And we'll look forward to talking to you next week.
Okay. Thanks.